back to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark and Mark here to wrap up the 17th and final race of the 2020 Formula One World Championship. And I can see that just by our wardrobe choices tonight, Mark, we're representing the protagonists, like the podium in today's race. I got the Red Bull t-shirt on. You got the Lewis Hamilton Brazil. That's a sharp-looking cap. I like that. I should have jumped on that one when I had the opportunity. But, you know, it's funny, after it's been all said and done in such a weird season and something that only got started in this first weekend of July, it seems like it's kind of rocketed along. And, well, not like I have any say in the matter, but I'm not ready for the season to be over. But it was a bit of an anti-climax to what's been, you know, a pretty good season, in a season that we honestly didn't expect was going to happen at all at some point.
You know, we were both wrong, because we both had a prediction at the conclusion of the most recent podcast, and we both thought that this was going to be a race that Hamilton would win, and probably win quite handedly. And as it turns out, that wasn't the case at all. In fact, we'll obviously get into Max's performance from qualifying right through to the conclusion of the race. But I was kind of curious as to what the last 5 or 6 years looked like at Abu Dhabi, at Yas Marina. And Mercedes had won every single race at this track since the introduction of the 1.6 liter V6 turbo hybrid engines. Hamilton's won 4 of those. He's won 5 total, because he won a race there with Mercedes, or with McLaren. Bottas won a race. Rosberg won a race. But this was a really strong streak by Mercedes that Max was able to snap, which was also ultimately nice to see. And, you know, he took away some of that delta between he and Bottas. And fortunately for Bottas, he had a fairly successful conclusion to the season, although he wasn't necessarily very close to Max. But yeah, it was a conclusion. It wasn't a particularly exciting conclusion, but it certainly puts the icing on what was, and I think you and I have talked about this so much over the past couple of weeks, what was really a solid campaign for Formula One. Given everything that was going on in the world, I was immensely satisfied. And I think maybe the only difference is, I think as much as you're hungry for more Formula One, I'm hungry for the off season. For me, like the silly season and the business side of the sport is just about as compelling as watching what happens on the track. And well, we'll certainly get into this, but when you consider the immense driver changes that we're going to see in the off season this year, like I'm excited to put this season behind us and start getting ready for Melbourne back in March, because it's going to be a really, really, really exciting 2021 campaign.
You know, it's funny. I don't know if I just had a complete misconception in my mind. If I sort of rewinded a year, almost a year to the day when we kind of looked at the drivers that were out of contract at the end of 2020, you had Lewis Hamilton, Bottas, Charles, Seb, all these guys, and Max, and all the drivers in the top teams. And I guess from there, that must have influenced my perception of the rest of the other 7 teams on the grid, that it was, once you get those guys under contract, it was all, and we all expected them to stay where they were. I just had this, this concept in my mind that the rest of the grid was already set in stone. But I mean, obviously that's not the case. And a lot of things have really kind of snowballed. I mean, it all really started when Vettel was confirmed as not returning to Ferrari for 2021. You had Sainz moving, you had Ricciardo moving, and all these things kind of like steamrolling and snowballing along. And like you say, it still isn't done. We still don't know what's going to happen with Sergio Perez. We don't know what's going to happen to Alex Albon. We don't know what's going to happen to Danny Kvyat, although that's not a major one. I mean, everybody's going to be looking at that second Red Bull to see what's going to happen. I mean, as much as that Vettel to Aston Martin seemed to be a bit of a foregone conclusion, it almost seemed like it was destined to happen. It almost has the same sort of feeling now. The guy that lost his seat to Sebastian Vettel is going to be the guy that takes the seat at Red Bull, because you know that conversation about Perez replacing Albon at Red Bull, I mean, that's been out for several weeks now. I mean, we've talked about it on the weekly show quite a bit over the past couple of weeks, and it almost has that same feeling as it did when the roles were reversed and he looked like he was the odd man out at Racing Point. But I mean, there is a lot of interesting stories to go over, or that are going to unfold in the weeks and months ahead. But you know, just to pick up on a couple of points there, Yes, the fact that they got the season done, and this is a stat that blew my mind that I came across over the season. So we had Lewis Hamilton come back, obviously finished third, and I should say we did predict the podium or the results, and I think we did try and preface it. It really depended whether or not Lewis was going to be 100% after his recent illness with COVID. Fortunately, it was obviously mild, but obviously it and he said so itself, it really affected him quite a bit, because you could tell he wasn't really on his A game. You could just tell, and I kept asking myself during the course of the race that I was really impressed with the way that that Max drove, not just during the race but through the entire weekend. I mean, from the wonderful qualifying performance to grab pole position, but I just couldn't get rid of that nagging thought throughout the race that if Lewis was 100%, would it have been the same way, or would it have been, would have been switched around? Would it have been Lewis, then Max, and then Bottas? I mean, ultimately, it's just a speculation. We'll never really know. It doesn't really have it doesn't really mean much anyways. I mean, Max is the fastest and the best driver on the day, but it was pretty quiet up front. I mean, the action we did see was, further down the racing order in the middle of the pack, which you might expect, but it wasn't a stellar race out of the entire season, was it?
Yeah, and I think the one thing I would caution as well, and I'm happy for Max, he had a great weekend, but even he had speculated to the reporters this weekend that it was possible that Mercedes had intentionally turned down their power units for this race, and ultimately Mercedes came forward and admitted that for reliability purposes, they absolutely had turned down their engines. So, I think they were at the point in the season where they wrapped up the driver's title, they wrapped up the constructor's title, they just wanted to bring the cars home safely, and I think they did enough to do so. But I think the caution would be that as much of a gap as there was between Verstappen and those Mercedes cars, that maybe some of that was a little bit artificial. But yeah, you're right. The weekend was uneventful. The race was uneventful. And, people have been criticizing this track since the beginning of time. And I don't criticize the race organizers. And I was thinking about this earlier today. I really don't criticize the race organizers. I don't criticize Yas Marina. I don't criticize Abu Dhabi. Like, ultimately, when they were bidding for a race and it was announced in 2007, this track and the track design and the track designer were really imposed upon them by the FIA and Formula One. So they didn't really have a choice of track. It's just such a anticlimactic way to end the season. And I think what we've seen over the last 4 or 5 years is, short of 2014 when the title was decided at Yas, and 2016 when the title was decided at Yas, it's really such an anticlimactic finish. The track it looks beautiful on TV. It's surface beautiful. It's super, super grippy. But ultimately it's just not engineered to produce and to nurture compelling competitive racing. And I think that's ultimately what we saw this weekend. So kudos to Max. You know what? He managed to secure pole. He had a great qualifying session. He managed to win the race. That was never really in doubt. But I also don't believe that either of those Mercedes were pushing particularly hard. And as noted, that the engines were intentionally turned down for reliability purposes. So yeah, it's not a great way to wrap up the season, especially after a couple of really exciting races preceding this one in Bahrain. So yeah, it is what it is. I just think too, like, I would love for Formula One and Liberty and the FIA to find some ways to inject some excitement into this race. But ultimately, I don't know what the financial incentive to do so would be. But yeah, it's not a great way to wrap up the season, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, when it comes from a gaming point of view, it is a very fun game to play when you're playing like the F1 video game. Sorry, a fun track to race on. But I mean, the one term that was thrown out there quite a few times during the commentary on Sky Sports today was DRS train. And you have that long straightaway. And I mean, it lends to that kind of racing. And I mean, you get all these guys, they're all within a second of each other. I mean, they've got the DRS. They're not really, gaining on one another. And they get to some of the twistier technical parts of the track, and they're just all kind of hanging on, and we see some of the passing when the cars get mixed up because of the pit stops. I mean, we saw the Ferraris as high as what, about P7 and 8 at one point, and then after the cars that had pitted, they slowly started filtering back through the running order, which you would expect. And I mean, you had Charles and Seb racing pretty close with one another. and they weren't going to gain on either one for that very reason. I mean, at the end of the race, I mean, they ended in 13 and 14th, which is, that still just shocks me that you would see a Ferrari, down there so low. But, it is a track that, despite, when you look at the layout of it, you would expect with, the long straightaway and the corner and the twisty bits and stuff like that would lend to better racing, but sadly, it doesn't. And I mean, from a championship point of view, this race didn't really mean anything anyways, what with the constructors and drivers being wrapped up weeks ago. But, and we've talked about it quite a bit, over the past several weeks that, Valtteri Bottas is a real good teammate. He's a real good team guy for Mercedes. And I think regardless what was going to happen today, I think that Lewis was going to play second fiddle. So as much as that, he was affected by his recent, bout with COVID, even in its mild form, I think he would have sat back depending on what the, how the situation on the track played out. If he had to run interference between himself and Valtteri Bottas and Max Verstappen and kind of be that buffer between Bottas and Max, he would have done that. And I think that those two were fighting for second in the Drivers' Championship, I think that unless something dire happened, I think that Lewis would have just sat back there and just content in third place. I mean, he didn't really wasn't really challenged by Albon until very late in the race. At that point, Albon was still a couple of seconds behind, and unless Lewis had a mechanical failure or his tires went completely and he couldn't keep it on the track anymore, I mean, he was not really under threat. So, yeah, I mean, I think you said it best that even though that Max was, faster on the weekend, that, was a little bit artificial just due to the fact that the Mercedes cars, they did have the engine turned down because of the reliability issues that they were worried about. And I mean, they said that they talked about on the commentary as well that a lot of these cars and a lot of these engines, across multiple teams were facing the same issues just getting towards the end of their lifespan. And unfortunately for Sergio Perez, that played out to be true. And that really was a big, big issue. And we'll jump into that in just a moment as we take a quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
All right, well, welcome back to the show, and we are wrapping up the final race of the season. And before we went to the break just now, Mark, We were just starting to have that discussion about what happened with Sergio Perez today, retiring, brought out the safety car, virtual safety car, kind of went through everything before they finally figured out how to get rid of that racing point. But ultimately, that was a huge, huge thing for Racing Point, because ultimately it had a huge impact on the World Championship, because by the time it was all said and done, they lost the points that they would have got from Sergio in the race. So as it turns out, it is McLaren that come home third in the World Championship. And if Racing Point had not been deducted those 15 points, then they would have taken that third place in the championship. So ultimately, all those rolling protests that we saw from Renault during the middle of the summer, it was almost like a weekly thing that, you have your race results. And yes, Renault's lodged another complaint about the legality of the car that Racing Point has. And it did come down to it. I mean, that huge fine that they got on it, plus the 15 points deducted in the constructors. And it just had to be underlined by that mechanical failure, because Lance didn't really finish all that high today, and it was a disappointing result for them, because I mean ultimately they end up dropping down in the constructors by a spot in the reduction in the prize money. I mean, you look at it, where did Lance finish? So he finished in P10 by the time 10. It was all said and done. So really, really disappointing for them. So I mean, we saw that this was, I think, a breakout season for them, and sadly, that I guess pushing the limits of what they could do with the parts that they can and cannot use just came back to bite them, and that's it's a big financial hit in the fine and the loss in the prize money.
It was always going to be a long shot, and we talked about this last podcast about, hey, here, despite the fact that the championships were settled, there were still some things to tune in and watch this weekend, and one of them was whether Bottas was going to be able to fend off Max and ultimately keep his second place in the Drivers' Championship, and he was able to successfully do that. But what was much more compelling and interesting to me was whether the Canadian team, Racing Point, was going to be able to push back against a surging McLaren team and keep third place in the championship. And I thought so much from a narrative perspective, what a phenomenal story that would be, that this was a team that was saved from administration two and a bit years ago, that it got an immediate influx and injection of capital from Lawrence Stroll and his conglomerate, and so many things they've done well. Like, I just thought it would have been such a great story to see them finish third. And to your point, unfortunately, it was not a good weekend. It was not a good race day. Ultimately, Lance finished P10 after getting passed by Ocon on, I think, the last or the second to last corner of the last race to give up that point. They obviously scored just the one point, whereas the McLaren team comes in and they score a fifth and a sixth point. So they leapfrog Racing Point in the constructors. And I think the bigger piece here is, one, it just would have been a really great story for Racing Point and something that they could have built on going into the next season. Like, I don't think they had strong expectations this year that this was really going to be a building year as they build towards becoming that Aston Martin Works team, which will ultimately launch during the offseason and going into 2021. But I think it would have been an unbelievable story, and it would have been a real reflection of the work and the energy that that team has done at Silverstone over the last couple of years at their factory. But it was a little bit disappointing. And I mean, I'm happy for McLaren. Ultimately, this is a team that has really shown some astronomical improvement ever since they severed ties with Honda and joined forces with Renault, although of course that partnership's coming to an end this offseason as well, which will be interesting to watch going into 2021. But they obviously desperately need the cash, and this was a team that took $150 million pound loan from a Bahraini bank during the early part of calendar 2020. This is a team that ultimately sold the famous McLaren Technology Center and immediately leased it back because they needed that injection of capital. And this is the same team that sold a 15% stake in their motorsports division even in the last week because they're so desperate to gain some capital and some equity. So it's good for them, and I'm happy for them. It'll just be really interesting to see how both these teams fare next year, because I can't believe that Ferrari will, and there's nothing to suggest they're going to be any better, but so many of these points were available this year simply because Ferrari was responding to the fact that, for all intents and purposes, they were caught cheating by the FIA last season. And so much of their performance this year has been a byproduct of that. And there's no guarantee these points will be available next year. And both of these teams are going to see driver changes, right? Like Sergio Perez, who won that race with Racing Point last weekend, will no longer be with the team. And we'll talk about him in a little bit. And Carlos Sainz will no longer be with McLaren, although, of course, they're picking up Daniel Ricciardo, which will be a big, big win for them just from a professionalism perspective and a charismatic perspective. But yeah, it was a little bit disappointing because as a Canadian, I was rooting for Racing Point, but that was one of the bigger stories this weekend was that McLaren was able to have a great race weekend and put both of their drivers in a really good position. And then I think the other thing for me from this race as well is we've talked so much about Alexander Albon the last couple of weeks, and I'll pass it back to you, but this was probably one of his better race weekends. And this was a guy who was surging towards the end of the race and putting a little bit of pressure on Hamilton. And some of that could be just the fact that he knows that this could potentially be the last F1 race of his career and he needed to put in the best possible performance possible. But yeah, overall, you know, boring race, to be totally frank. But I think the thing that I was most interested in watching was to see how Racing Point would race, and I just thought their weekend was disappointing. And we talked last weekend as well just about the fact that Racing Point has, despite the things that they have done well this season, they've really struggled with reliability. They've really, really struggled with reliability despite having that Mercedes power unit. And that's something that they're going to need to solve going to next season. You know, we talked about the fact that Lance, and this wasn't entirely mechanically induced, but he had 5 retirements this year. Like for a top team, you can't retire your car 30% of the time. And even that race weekend, and this was a really strong black eye for Racing Point this year, but we had that event in Britain in, I think, the 4th or 5th race weekend of the year where Nico Hülkenberg was brought in to race that car in the absence of Sergio Perez, and the team couldn't get the car to the grid, which is shocking and totally, totally unacceptable at this level. But again, if they could even clear up half of the reliability issues that they had this year, next year, they should be in a really, really strong position.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that you make a really good point about that. Like some of the hiccups and some of the issues that they've had along the ways, I think it's very indicative of a team that, you know, that you can see that good things are happening. It's starting to come together for them, but you can still tell that there's still some of those tentacles from sort of hanging on to maybe the framework they've had to operate in for the past number of years, where there wasn't a lot of cash in there. You could tell that that's kind of handcuffed them to a certain degree, because you wouldn't expect that. I mean, yeah, 5 DNFs for Lance. I mean, he's 50 points behind his teammate in the drivers' championships. I think Checo had about 125 points, and Lance, if I'm correct, is mid 70s. Somewhere
75
that.
Exactly.
75, yeah. So there, my math is almost correct. But yeah, so I mean, he's left a lot of points out on the track there, and that is unfortunate. So it is going to be interesting to watch this team, because you know they're taking this big step forward. I mean, there's a lot of money coming into it now. They've got a new driver in Sebastian Vettel, the new factory which is being constructed. I mean, you've got all the money from Lawrence Stroll and his consortium flowing into the team. So it's certainly going to be one to watch to next year. And it is fascinating too, because I mean, of course, we're just rolling these cars ahead for another year, because we're kind of in this weird in-between year where 2021 is basically a continuation of 2020, and we're basically looking at the same cars that we've seen from 2019 to 2020 to 2021. I mean, very limited development, let's put it that way, until we get the new cars on the horizon for 2022. So as much as it's an opportunity missed, for this season for Racing Point going into next year, I think that to be a kind of a glass is half full guy, if you're a Racing Point fan, or you are the Racing Point team yourself, that you know there are a lot of positives to draw from. You know, you're not going to see this huge big shift in development. I mean, everybody's going to have to use this token system to develop the components on their car, you know, sparingly and wisely over the course of the next year. So it's going to be a good one to watch. But going back to McLaren, I mean, had you said to me a couple of years ago that they would have finished in, ahead of Ferrari, in third in the Constructors' Championship, behind the obvious ones of Red Bull and Mercedes, I probably would have flat out called you a liar before, laughing hysterically, because I mean, a couple of years ago, I mean, they were just in such a bad position when you kind of look at the team where they were then, and that it just was. It was just bad. You just can't classify it or characterize it in any other way. It was just bad. And it was just unfortunate. I mean, they just, I could see the logic in partnering up with Honda again, but just the timing was way too soon. I mean, obviously Honda was eager to get into racing because they'd been developing the engines. So who knows, maybe it was a little bit too optimistic from McLaren side and Honda side probably, but it really was unfortunate. I mean, if you dial it back and look at those years with Van Dorn and Alonso and just how slow they were and how unreliable the engines were, and the car just wasn't great despite what McLaren themselves were saying. But I think that and I've tried to bring it up and mention it, but I don't think it gets mentioned up in the mainstream media. It's just I think the great work that Zach Brown has done, that, you know, he did what he needed to do initially, and then he slowly but surely appointed key people and key roles and then sort of stepped back. I mean, you still see him in races, you still hear him in the media, but you know, you don't hear him overriding Andreas Seidel or, you know, James Key, anybody else. I mean, he's there to do his job, but he's letting his people do what they're supposed to do and what they're paid to do. And you can see that, I mean, they're light years ahead of where they were a couple of years ago. And although I think it's kind of curious that they decided to, you know, switch away from Renault. I mean, that obviously seems to be working well, but they've decided to switch back to Mercedes. And well, why wouldn't you want a Mercedes engine in your car if it's available? So, I mean, that, you know, just in a very superficial way, I mean, it's a bit of a no-brainer, that decision. And certainly that's going to be very, very interesting. And just the whole dynamic of bringing Daniel Ricciardo into that team in the vacancy left by Carlos Sainz is another fascinating storyline, because he's kind of made this, he made a backward steps going to Renault. But Renault, they kind of missed out. I mean, they ended up fifth in the championship by the time it was all said and done. But having said that, I can't help but feel that this was a bit of an improvement on this year. I mean, Abitbol was saying before the season got started that he wasn't really expecting too much. And, you know, they're really looking towards 2022. But that notwithstanding, I still think it was a fairly productive year from them. I mean, of course, the majority of the points came from Danny Ricciardo, finished up fifth in the championship with 119 points. His teammate Esteban Ocon, yeah, I mean, he was back there 12th with only half the points that that Danny Ric had. You know, he only had 62 by the time it was all said and done. And you could tell that maybe that year out of Formula One as reserve driver at Mercedes kind of hurt Ocon. I mean, I'm sure he learned a lot, you know, being in that environment at Mercedes. But just the fact that he wasn't in that car each and every weekend and just missing out on those, whatever we had last year, 22 races or whatever it was, I think did set him back a little bit. But we've seen a little bit more from him, so I think if he'd been able to score a little bit better and finish a little bit better, obviously therefore he would have had more points in the drivers' championship, and that would have been reflected on the constructors' side. But I think there's been some positive signs, and it is going to be interesting to watch, because now you're bringing in a very flamboyant, a very maybe outspoken is better than flamboyant, opinionated driver in Fernando Alonso. Maintains he can still race at the age of 40. And I don't discount that. I mean, athletes today and drivers today, it's a far different story than it was 10 years ago or 20 years ago. And I mean, Fernando is a talented driver, but I mean, he has tended to leave a heap of burning wreckage at other places that he's been you know, in his career. So not to say that that was the case when he left Renault. And I mean, that's always been there. But I mean, to put it sort of bluntly, he hasn't left some of his previous teams in the best circumstances. I mean, it didn't end all that badly with McLaren, as say it had it, or the last time, the second time he left McLaren compared to maybe the the first time. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch as well. And, you know, I can't wait to get to Melbourne in just under 100 days from now for the Australian Grand Prix to see how these cars line up and who can do what. Because, you know, as we said right off the top of the show, there's so many storylines that are going to play out off the track and on the track for next year. Now that we got this season over and done with, I'm kind of like, bring it on. I don't know how I can be patient over the next 3.5 months.
That, you know, that Ocon finish 2 weekends ago, or I guess last weekend, because this season's been so condensed, was so important to him. I think both from a professional perspective and from a psychological perspective, because you're right. You know, Daniel Ricciardo finishes the season with 119 points. With that P2, Ocon finishes with just 62 points. And, you know, had he not had that podium, he would have been at 50 points, maybe 45 points. And that delta would have been huge. And I think the challenge for Ocon next year is, you talk about Alonso. Alonso introduces an entirely new dynamic to that team. And Ocon isn't necessarily a great teammate. He's not a great leader. He's not a great team player. Like, he's going to create a pressure cooker environment for that team. And for Ocon's sake, and I think given his heritage and given the fact that he has a year with that team now, he's going to be in a better position than maybe Stoffel Van Dorn was. But I think it's going to be a really, really challenging year for him next year if he can't compete. And Alonso is particularly competitive. I think the question marks will come fast and furious about whether he has a future with that team. And you're really right about that Zach Brown piece. And I credit him not only for steering the Formula One division successfully after their divorce from Honda, but ultimately, you know what, creating a, I struggle to say marriage or partnership with Renault because it was so short term, but he did enough with that financial arrangement to create a competitive car, knowing that Renault was probably never going to be a long-term partner. And I think Renault was never satisfied with the agreement. And I think there's been a lot of commentary about that in the press. So the fact that they've been competitive with an engine from a team that isn't fully invested in supporting them in the long term and wasn't necessarily giving them the resources in the paddock and at the factory that they would have gotten if they were buying their engines from a Ferrari or a Mercedes is really, really remarkable. And you know what? There's obviously going to be a transition cost and some sunk costs during the off season as they get ready to pair the Mercedes engine with a car that fundamentally was designed for a Renault engine. But I think that I've got the confidence in Zach Brown and his team that they're going to be able to do it. But the other thing that I have to keep recalling as well is Zach Brown's done all of this with the Formula One team while getting an IndyCar team off the ground for a full-time competition in the US. And we'll probably get into this in the offseason when we run out of topics to talk about, but there's now strong rumors and suggestions that Ferrari is themselves very seriously considering a full-time entry into Indy as well, which I think would be incredibly exciting. But yeah, like from a Mercedes perspective, from a McLaren perspective, I'm very excited for them. I'm super excited to see what Ricciardo's going to do there. I think he's a phenomenal teammate. Everything I've ever heard from him suggests that he's a great partner. He's a great team guy. He's great from the media. He's great from the press. Like, he just brings so much to this team. And Renault has what I think they would want. I think they obviously have a really strong history with Alonso. You know, he won a title with them in 05. He won another title with them in 06. So there's some really strong DNA and some really strong heritage there. I think he creates an atmosphere within the team that they need to be able to be prepared to manage, because he's not Daniel Ricciardo, who's generally cool and chill and can have a conversation. Alonso is a very, very, very different personality. And, you know, his first time around with McLaren was a disaster. The second time was, and it's funny because if you compare the two examples, like the first time was so bad, it made the second example not look as bad, but relative to other divorces with other teams and other drivers, it was a catastrophic. It was a crater. Like, he left that place burning, but yeah, it'll be something that's very, very interesting. And you know what? Just one other quick note as well, just because I was just looking at this right now. But over the past 3 race weekends, the Ferrari powered teams have collectively scored 1 point. 1 point amongst those 3 teams. Because I was going to make this great point that, hey, you know what? Ferrari themselves have scored 1 point in the last 3 race weekends. No, the Ferrari powered teams themselves have scored 1 point, which is really an indictment on that team.
Well, you know, it's funny you should mention that. I mean, if you look at the constructors in the, I mean, we might as well just run it down quickly. You have Mercedes, Red Bull, McLaren, Racing Point, Renault. Then in sixth, you have Ferrari. Then you have AlphaTauri in seventh. Then you have Alpha, Haas, and then Williams at the bottom. So in the bottom half of the constructors this year, you have all three Ferrari-powered teams, including the works team, which is just shocking. And I mean, the thing is, too, with Ferrari, they scored a combined 131 points. You know, for both Charles Leclerc and Sebastian Vettel. I mean, that is just absolutely mind-blowing. Seb had three podiums. Charles did not get on the podium once this year. It's the other way around. Charles had three podiums, and Seb did not get on the podium once this year. But, I mean, that is just mind-blowing. But what blows my mind even more is they're 50 points behind Renault in the constructors. I mean, that is just, I mean, and Renault, the gap to Renault and Racing Point is only 14 points, which, you know, you would expect somewhere in the middle of the field there. It's just that they were slow, but compared to the other teams that they're, you know, they should be racing against in the middle of the pack, they're miles behind. And that's what really, really, really blows my mind. And what I said for quite a bit, especially in the first half of the season, that they were closer to Williams in terms of pace than they were to Mercedes. And that just absolutely blows my mind. And I want to pick up on Ferrari just on the other side. I mean, this was Sebastian Vettel's last race with the Scuderia after several years with the team. And we'll do so just after a very short break here on the Overtime Media Network. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right. Well, welcome back to the podcast. It is always up to speed with Formula One. Mark and Mark here breaking down the 2020 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. I was almost going to say 2016 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. I don't know. That obviously was a fairly dramatic race. And as you so rightly pointed out, it was a race where the championship was decided. And, you know, as we detailed in the show earlier, it tends to be fairly, not too much action on the track. So that's probably why I'm like warping back, several years here to 2016. But anyways, before the break, we were talking about, we just started to talk about Ferrari and the horrible year that they had. This was Sebastian Vettel's last race for Ferrari. And, disappointing. I mean, he finished in 14th place. It was just, you would just expect to see a lot better from Sebastian Vettel. I mean, he's 13th in the championship. I was incorrect. He did get a podium. He got on the podium in Turkey a couple of weeks ago. But I mean, Charles had a better season, finishing eighth with 98 points. But Sebastian, a handful, several retirements, but finishing outside of the points in so many races. I mean, after the Eiffel Grand Prix at the Nürburgring back in October, he only had two other points finishes. He finished 10th in Portugal, third in Turkey, And the rest, I mean, he's, you know, in, at Imola, 12th, and Bahrain, 1, 13th, Bahrain, 2, 12th, and 14th today. Just, you know, 33 points on the season. I mean, in the heyday of Seb at Ferrari, I mean, that's points haul for like maybe a weekend and a half of racing. I mean, you would, not really expect to see that. And, I just, can't help but, wonder when it's going to turn around for them. I mean, just the fact that these cars are going to be, in effect, duplicated again for next year. I mean, with some slight modifications and improvements and developments on them. I really struggle to think that we're going to see anything, you know, better from them. And it's, you know, if you're a fan of Vettel or Charles Leclerc, especially if you're a Vettel fan, a Ferrari fan, I mean, that window of opportunity for a championship was in 2018, at least two thirds of the way through the season. And then I think in Monza that year when he collided with Hamilton on the first lap, that was kind of the beginning of the end, because they went into the summer break that year pretty close in terms of points in the Drivers' Championship. Vettel comes out after that break. He wins at Spa in just very convincing you know, form ahead of Hamilton. And then it starts to go downhill from there. And then it's just from that sort of that last third of 2018, it just kind of really started to tail off. Last year was a year to forget for them. It wasn't the best. And this year, definitely a year to forget for Ferrari. Regardless that the results have been a little bit better in recent times. But, you know, despite the fact that, you know, Vettel obviously had his issues, and the fact that that car was not the best. I mean, you look at all the different, you know, results that you see for Charles Leclerc. I mean, he had a couple of podiums this year, but I mean, the amount of point or times that he finished in the points was, a lot more than Vettel. I mean, the times, Charles had four DNFs. But apart from that, he had three races out of the points. One was in Abu Dhabi, another one was at Spa, and then the other one was in Hungary. All the other times he finished well within the points. But I just can't help asking the question. Yes, we know that Charles is a very good driver that tends to get more out of a bad car than his teammate. We saw that at Alpha Spa, or sorry, Alpha Sauber, or whatever they called it a couple of years ago. And obviously the Ferrari this year isn't as great, but I just can't help but asking myself that ever since it was made known that Vettel was not going to be brought back for 2021, you know, despite what they say publicly, I just don't have the confidence that he was getting the same level of support. It just, I mean, there's too big of a gap in what, you know, the car that, that Vettel had. I mean, he just complained too many times that, that the car just was not drivable. It just didn't have any grip. And I just don't know. I have to be convinced that he was given the same equipment as Charles Leclerc. I'm not buying it, is basically what I'm saying.
I'm really excited for, and maybe it's us, I don't know, but I can't wait until somebody really patches together the story of Vettel's career.
Yeah.
You know, this is a guy who finished second in 2009 and then ran off his four consecutive championships. He moves to Ferrari in 2015 amongst a massive fanfare. He finishes third in 2015, and 2017 and 2018, he finishes second. But, you know, when I reflect back on his championship performances, I really feel like 2017 and 2018, you know, there was definitely some mistakes there. Amongst them, maybe the most notable was that start in Singapore. But ultimately, like, it's crazy. Like, if you look at his performances in 2018 and 2017, five wins, 13 and 12 poles, respectively, those were better performances than his 2010 and his 2012 performance. He had similar win totals, but he had more podiums with Ferrari in both those years than he did in either of those championship seasons with Red Bull. And maybe it was ultimately just bad timing, right? Like, you know, as much as everything worked out for those first four titles, that the field was a little bit more fractured. There wasn't really a kind of obvious dominant number two, and Ferrari was competitive in some of those seasons. Maybe it was just bad timing. And you know what? He just happened to be with Ferrari in 2017 and 2018 when they had a phenomenal car, but Mercedes was just too good and nobody was ever going to touch them. But it's crazy how quickly his his championship contention kind of fell off. You know, 2017, he finished second. 2018, he finished second in a year where Bottas was very, very poor. And then all of a sudden in 2019, you introduce Charles Leclerc to that team and he drops to fifth. And he goes from 5 wins and 12 podiums to 1 win and 9 podiums. And then all of a sudden, there's just all of this noise about his performance and his kind of emotional state, his psychological state. But I really hope that you're right, because I look at his performance this year relative to Charles Leclerc, and I just can't believe that his physical performance could degrade so quickly. Like, we're talking 2 years ago, he was second in the championship with 12 podiums and 5 wins. Like, he can't have fallen off that quickly. And obviously, like, you look at the car this year, it's terrible. The car itself is balanced for an entirely different power unit than what they're actually running. We know why that power unit is problematic, but I just can't believe that his performance has degraded so quickly. And to your point as well, like, drivers age differently now. They have completely different conditioning regimes. They have completely different diets. They're in the gym 365 days a year. Like, their career should be longer. So I really hope that next year when he's with Aston Martin, hopefully he gets enough factory time during the offseason that they can start building a car for him. But I completely agree with you. I don't think he was getting any support out of Maranello. Like, I think they had washed their hands of him. They knew in the offseason, they were confident they weren't going to bring him back. And as a result, I don't think they were spending the time with him. I don't think they were engineering the car for him. I think they basically just roll the car out every weekend as a professional courtesy and let him go. And I think maybe some of that, his performance was kind of, hey, emotionally, psychologically, I'm not being supported by this team. And maybe that kind of trickles down into his on-track performance. But I think he's still a much better driver than what we saw this year. I don't believe the delta between him and Charles is as big as it looks when you look at the standings. Because you're right. Like, if you look at the standings, Charles has a flurry of points finishes, and he had a really great run from, I would say, the seventh race weekend to Bahrain, the first race weekend there, versus Vettel, who really had just that one highlight, which was that third place in Turkey in what was a pretty crazy race weekend. And ultimately, a couple of drivers scored podiums there as a result of Lance Stroll's bad luck. But yeah, I don't believe the delta's as big as it looks on paper. And I think he was getting a fraction of the support that his teammate Charles Leclerc was. And hopefully 2021, and I think you would probably agree, like, I'm a big fan of Racing Point, soon to be Aston Martin. Like, I want them to do well. But if he doesn't perform and Sergio Perez does perform, the heat that will be on that team will be immense, will be immense. They won't be able to shake that off for some time. But that said, like I said, I don't believe that in 2 years, his personal performance, his physical performance could have degraded that dramatically.
Yeah, you know, you make a couple of really good points there. And kind of being around professional athletes, you know, at an elite level, you know, I've seen it so many times when they get injured, or, you know, whenever they face some adversity, it's always like they always think there's a way they can work their themselves out of it. You know, it's, oh, I need to do this, or I need to train harder. I have to, you know, get different nutrition, or I need to do whatever, right? And I think that when it comes to the end of their careers, I think some of them are less willing to admit it sooner than others. So there may be a little bit with that with Sebastian Vettel, but I'm not convinced. I don't like yourself. I don't think that, you know, that he can drop off that quickly. Moreover, I'm not entirely convinced that that it's all to do with him either, because I cannot believe that somebody with the business sense and savvy as Lawrence Stroll would bring a guy in like Sebastian Vettel just purely on the fact that, hey, you know, we're going to get a 4-time world champion into our team that makes us look legit. No, I mean, of course, that's part of it to do it. But I mean, Lawrence hasn't gotten to where he is in his own life and his own business standing in the world just by making, you know, irrational and poor judgments. So I think that, you know, there is an element of risk bringing Sebastian Vettel to Aston Martin next year, but I think that that they would have done their homework on that, and I think it's, you know, the risk is mitigated. I think it's more of a calculated risk. So undoubtedly he's going to bring a lot to the team, but if they needed to bring a guy to the team as an advisory, then then they wouldn't bring a guy in that role and stick him in the car as well. So it's certainly going to be, you know, very, very fascinating to watch. And, you know, I think the one guy that's probably really loving it is the guy that's in the second Aston Martin, Lance, who, you know, at 22 right now, is going to be partnered up with a four-time world champion next year, thinking, oh my God, you know, that this is the perfect time to me for me to be partnered up with a guy at this stage in my career and the age that I'm at right now. I mean, Lance is, I wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be the first guy to welcome Seb to the factory on his first day with the new team. But I mean, sort of joking aside, but that really is going to be, you know, among all the different interesting threads to pull on for next year, that is a particularly, you know, interesting one. I mean, that whole Racing Point, Aston Martin, you know, there's so many different interesting things going on with that team.
I had to look it up right now because I was curious, because you'd mentioned earlier that Fernando's 40. So he's 39. He's going to turn 40 July 29th of next season. So he's actually pretty close in age to me. We all know Lewis is 35. This shocked me. Vettel's only 33.
Yeah.
Like just because he's been around the sport and he won a race in 2008, like it feels like he should be much older than he is. Mm-hmm. The guy's only 33. And I think in a lot of sports that might be kind of towards the tail end of your career, but I think Formula One has shown that drivers, both past and present, can be very competitive in their mid-30s. So I think there's every reason to believe that he could be successful next year. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, I think for Lawrence Stroll, this isn't a prestige move. This isn't signing Sebastian Vettel because it's useful to have as a marketing exercise, that I can go out and sell sponsorships because I have a champion. You know what? That's part of it for some of these middle of the pack teams, right? Like, if you don't have a great driver academy and you're not going to be competitive, sometimes the best thing you can do is sign a former world champion that's at the tail end of their career, because it brings some credibility to your team. You get some additional exposure and you can sell sponsorships. I think you're right. Like, Lawrence Stroll is expecting to win next year. Like, he doesn't need the marketing exposure. He doesn't need the sponsorship dollars. He needs the best possible driver that's available to him. And I think if he's embarking on this project of spending hundreds of millions of pounds building this works team and investing in Aston Martin as a road car division to enable him to kind of create this successful symmetry, I don't think he would be messing around with Sebastian Vettel unless he genuinely thought he was the best available driver. And I think you absolutely nailed it. Like, this isn't a marketing exercise. This isn't a prestige move. This isn't Williams, you know what, kind of bringing in Felipe Massa because, you know what, he was a marketable star. This wasn't McLaren holding on to Jenson Button probably longer than they should have because he was a British champion. It was easy to sell sponsorships in the UK. This is Lawrence Stroll saying he is a four-times world champion who finished second in the championship three times. He's also the best available driver to help my project be successful next year. And I can't wait to see it. I know that the backlash will be fast and furious if he's not particularly competitive, or if Lance himself outperforms Sebastian Vettel. But I think you're right. Like, I think if I'm Lance Stroll, I'm really excited that this is a guy that's going to be partnered with me, is going to be in the factory, is going to be in the simulator. Like, you know, I've talked about this before. Like, I don't think that the Felipe Massa Lance Stroll pairing was a good one. And, you know, there was comments from Lance Stroll at the end of that 2017 season that said, hey, he was anything but a mentor. And I think Felipe Massa was also a little bit checked out at that point. Like, he'd originally retired at the end of 2016 and he was brought back because Valtteri Bottas left. I don't think he was super invested in being there, especially with an uncompetitive team. And I also don't think that Felipe Massa liked being compared to Lance, who was close to him in the constructors title that year. And then, of course, in 2018, Lance gets stuck with a rookie driver and a horrendous team. He gets brought over to Racing Point in 2019. He's paired with Sergio. And say what you want about Sergio, but I think he's a good teammate, but he's probably not a great mentor for Lance. But I think this is going to be a really great mentor. And I just think for Lance to be able to watch how he goes about his business, you know, how does he structure his preparation? How does he structure his planning? How does he spend his time with his engineers? At what time does he get to the factory every single morning? How much time does he spend in the simulator? Like, this is an established champion. Like, he didn't win one championship. He won four. And some of that's because he was racing with the best team that had the best motor. But ultimately, you know what? it's not just that that helps you get across the finish line four consecutive times. So I think for Lance, like, this is an unbelievable opportunity. And I also think that probably played a little bit into Lawrence's decision-making as well, that, hey, this is probably the best way to help nurture Lance's development. And I think we keep seeing these flashes with Lance, like qualifying, obviously in Turkey, and the fact that he was close to a race win before he had some mechanical issues. He scored a couple of podiums this year, came close to a third podium. Oh, I'm excited for Aston Martin next year. I really am.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's one thing just before we go into our last break here, I just wanted to mention is that the landscape that we're living in Formula One right now is that the groundwork was laid by Michael Schumacher. He changed the way that drivers approach Formula One. And I've heard it mentioned so many times over the years that people that have worked both with Sebastian Vettel and Michael Schumacher, Michael Schumacher said that Seb approaches Formula One in the same way. It was just, and Michael, he approached it like a job. It wasn't just like show up at the race, get in the car, go out and drive or whatever it was like an obligation. He put in the work, and Seb, he does the same thing. He puts in the work.
Yeah.
You know, so it's going to be very, very beneficial for everyone to have a guy like that, around. And before we go away here, it's just I think that and I know we've talked about it before, but I think we can really put that discussion about Lawrence Stroll being in Formula One, I think we can put that to bed now. I mean, he's here for the right reasons. It's just not another story of an extremely wealthy guy throwing his money around in a sport with a lot of exposure because, you know, he can do, and he's basically, you know, just splashing money out. He's there for the right reasons. He's there to race. He's there to win. He's there to invest the money, and you can tell that he's going about it the right way. Now, whether or not this is a team that that can win races or win more races, considering that they got that one win under their belt, that really is the big question. Because I think you really made a good point just now when we were talking more about Ferrari v Mercedes and how just difficult that whole Mercedes nut is to crack when you're a competitor, and just how I think maybe it's maybe not really quite, I'm sure it's acknowledged, but maybe not quite respected as much or deserved as much the recognition that Ferrari maybe doesn't get for those 2 years. Because, I mean, they really were the only ones that have really come close in recent times. I mean, finishing second is still the first of the losers, as Ayrton Senna always put it, which I think is a wonderful quote. But still, I mean, that 2018 season was that one opportunity that they had to really talk about it. Anyways, we should break away now for our final break. And when we come back, we should go back to where we sort of started the show at and talk about the silly season, because there's a couple of seats up for grabs. And we'll do that in just a moment here on the Overtime Media Network. So don't go away. We'll be back in just a moment. All right. Well, welcome back to the show. We are still breaking down we broke down the 2020 Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, still going and talking about some of the interesting talking points about it. And, we were just talking about Racing Point before the break. And of course, the big thing that still needs to be decided is what's going to happen to Sergio Perez. I mean, he's pretty much come out and said that, that a 2020 job or seat in Formula One is a lock. I mean, he hasn't hinted at anything more than that, and nobody in the paddock has said, oh yeah, well, we might know something about that, nudge nudge, wink wink. But yet Alex Albon, his status at Red Bull is to be confirmed. He himself says he feels like he's done absolutely everything he can to keep that seat. And I mean, in all fairness, I mean, he's had a bit of a rough season. I mean, he's had a couple of podiums, you know, most recently in Bahrain 1 a couple of weeks ago. But since the race in Imola, where he finished 15th and then finishing 12th in Portimao and retiring at the Nürburgring, last four races haven't been too bad for Alex. He had a 7th in Turkey, a 3rd in Bahrain, Bahrain 1, 6th at Bahrain 2, the Sakhir Grand Prix last week, and finished 4th today. 105 points in the World Championship, ultimately currently. I mean, he's 109 points behind his teammate, and because of that, of course, that's where all these discussions are going to come from. I mean, we did have this big discussion, on the weekly show just a couple of days ago now. But just the more that I think about it, and the way that I look at, despite the fact that we've seen some flashes from Alex Albon, despite the fact that he's still a fairly young driver, the fact that we've seen some hints, some promise that that there might be something there for Red Bull. I just don't know how you can leave a proven driver like Sergio Perez on the sidelines when he's there. And I mean, the thing is too, not that age is a big thing to do with it, but Alex is a little bit older compared to some of his contemporaries. I mean, he's 24 compared to like 22 for Lance, 21 for Verstappen and stuff like that. So, I mean, he already always kind of has like that, for me, a feel that he's at the age he should be kind of established in Formula One. I mean, Perez, he's a little bit older, 30. I mean, but by no means over the hill in Formula One. I mean, Sergio, I mean, he had, for me, I think he had a really, really good season. I mean, he only finished out of the race, out of the points once, and that was in Bahrain 1. I mean, he did, and that was because of a late retirement, but was still classified. I mean, he missed those two races at Silverstone, because of his positive COVID test. I mean, here's a guy who had a solid season. I mean, he had, and I think honestly, the last several races have been among his best. I mean, he was on the podium in Turkey, wins Sakhir Bahrain 2, and then, those other ones, Bahrain 1 and Abu Dhabi. You know, those are the two unfortunate ones for him. But I mean, it's a solid season. I mean, most of the times he was well up in the points. He had a couple P10s in Belgium and in Monza, but Monza was kind of topsy turvy anyways. So they kind of maybe put a star beside that one. But like we talked about at some length a couple of days ago, I just don't know how you can ignore a driver like that. I mean, I think you ignore him at your own peril.
So Ted Kravitz, and I love the buildup. I love that we're building to something here, especially as we've been talking about Alexander Albon and Sergio Perez for so much for the past couple of weeks. But if Ted Kravitz is to believed, or be believed, and he's now reporting, he's reporting that within the next 7 days, Red Bull will announce that they are going to move Albon into a full-time reserve/test role with the principal Red Bull team, and that Sergio Perez will be signed. Apparently, the delay was really due to two things. One, the team didn't need or want the added distraction of announcing this in season. It wasn't a good play. It wasn't a good look. Optically, it wasn't sound, especially when there were so many things going on. And really, it sounds like Marco and Horner really had to work hard to convince Dietrich that this was the right move, that Marco and Horner had very much given up on Albon some time ago. And it was really just a matter of convincing Dietrich that this is the right move for this team. And as it turns out as well, it sounds as though Ross Brawn, working on behalf of Liberty, had been working very hard in the background to make this a reality. And ultimately, I don't think Red Bull would ever make a decision based on what the FIA or what Liberty wants them to do. I think they have too much internal integrity to kind of allow somebody else to force a decision. But one of the reasons that this could potentially be very good for Red Bull, aside from what it could do for them on the track, is Mexico itself, as it turns out, is one of Red Bull's biggest global markets. In terms of a nation state consuming their product, Mexico is huge. So from a marketing tie-up perspective, this is a big news story. The other thing too is Liberty is very, very worried at this time about potentially losing the Mexican Grand Prix from the calendar. And if you followed this at all over the last couple of years, the Mexican GP has really become a political hot button issue within federal politics in that country. It's very much been seen as a unnecessary vanity project of the government and certain select politicians. And as well as it's drawn at the gate, I think Mexican society as a whole has been very suspect about the costs associated with it, whether it turns a profit, whether it's necessary. But the thought is that from a Liberty perspective, they want to keep the race on the calendar. It looks good on TV. They want the hosting fee. But by having Sergio in the sport and with a very competitive team, it basically locks in and secures the future of that event as well, which wasn't guaranteed if he was racing with the Haas and certainly wasn't guaranteed if he was out of the sport. So this is not only a good thing for Red Bull from a marketing and profitability perspective, because they're going to be able to continue to grow their brand in that market. It's good for them on the track. And then ultimately it's good for Liberty and Formula One, because they might be able to preserve a race that's become a fan favorite. It's one of my absolute favorite races to watch on TV. And I would go, I'm a little bit worried about the security situation in Mexico City. And for all of the Mexican listeners, they might be wanting to slap me on my wrist. Like, hey, it's better than you think. Don't pay attention to all those Mexican soap operas you watch on Netflix. But I think it's good for so many reasons. Now, again, this is just Ted Kravitz reporting. Nobody else has broken the story, but he's suggesting that Red Bull will make the announcement within the next 7 days. And like I said, Alexander Albon won't go to AlphaTauri, that he'll remain with the big team, but he'll have remained in a test and a reserve driver capacity. So it'll be interesting to see that by the next time we get on the podcast again, maybe we can stop speculating and maybe it will be confirmed and we'll be able to talk about it and then move on to some other exciting things, just because the story itself, it was a hot issue ever since it became clear that Vettel was going to go to Aston Martin Racing Point. And that story itself seemed to drag out forever. Week after week, we were talking about it within F1 circles. Is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? When is Racing Point going to finally announce it? And then they announced it. And then ever since then, it's what's going to happen to Sergio? What's going to happen to Sergio? And then when Sergio won that race last weekend, it just became like the boiler just exploded. Like, It was a hot button issue prior to that, but as soon as he won that race, it's just like you can't have this race winner not in the sport next year. So sounds like that issue should be, if Ted Kravitz is to believe, and there's no reason to suggest he shouldn't be, within the next 7 days.
You know, it really is interesting too, because what you have then in effect is you have the third and fourth place finishers in the Drivers' Championship this year. I mean, talk about a big drop off. I mean, we all know that Lewis was miles ahead of everyone else, you know, 347 points in the Drivers to seal up his seventh World Championship. Then you have Valtteri Bottas, 223, the Max Verstappen with 214 points, and Sergio Perez, 125. I mean, he scored very, very well in the Racing Point, but I, you know, no disrespect to them, obviously, but I mean that Red Bull is a step further up the grid, so will be absolutely fascinating to see, you know, should that come to play. And if it's coming from Ted Kravitz, I mean, I think that's obviously a pretty legit source. I mean, for yeah. Those of you that aren't familiar with Ted, you know, he's one of the contributors to Sky Sports F1, you know, often in the pit lane. So I think that if it's coming from him, you know, he wouldn't be the kind of guy to sort of indulge or release idle speculation or something to yeah. It so kind of makes me wonder if this is one of those things where somebody's had a little bit of a word in his ear. Come on, Ted, you know, this is all done, you know, go ahead and you know, leak this. You know, for those of you not watching yeah. The YouTube show right now, I'm just doing the inverted commas here. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. But I mean, it does kind of tidy the situation up nicely. Obviously, you know, dumping Albon again in the middle of the season to bring in another driver, that doesn't look good, because obviously Red Bull, they kind of have that you know, that look now, is those guys that you know, aren't afraid to pull the trigger, you know, mid-season to replace you know, somebody that they think is an uncompetitive driver. And I mean, it's kind of you know, it keeps Albon in the system and it kind of keeps him close, so you know, he's still in a position to you know, to learn and take advantage of that. And you also have to remember that, you know, the next race is just under 100 days from now. It's like 96 days or something, like you know, I can't remember the exact total. So COVID isn't going away anytime soon. They've already said that bubble is going to be in effect for the beginning of the season. And of course, as vaccines and the situation hopefully starts to get better sooner rather than later, we may see the situation again where a driver may have to withdraw from a race because of a positive COVID test. I mean, you know, it'd be ironic if it happened to Sergio Perez again. I mean, considering he missed two races this year because of that exact reason. But I think it wraps that situation up nicely if you're Red Bull management, because you know Max, you know that he's going to go out there and he's going to win races for you. You know that he's going to be a contender, and you know he's a world champion in waiting, given the right car and the right circumstances. And that number two car just hasn't played out, right over the past couple of seasons since Ricardo left. So they're trying to bring somebody up on a closer level. And I think by getting Perez in, that really starts to close that gap. I think he's going to be more like, it'll be interesting to see where he is actually in terms of pace to Max Verstappen. I mean, we're used to seeing Sergio in a less competitive car, like a Force India or Racing Point. But, I don't think that he's going to be pushing Max, but it would be close to see what that delta between the two drivers is. And of course, as we mentioned a couple of days ago on the weekly show, that we're going into 2021, which is Honda's last year in the sport, and they've already said that they're going to go all out. And I still can't help but wonder if there's been some polite or maybe no gray area in the messaging coming from Honda HQ in Tokyo, saying, we want a stronger driver lineup for our last season in Formula One. And, even though there might not be a connection with Sergio Perez, I mean, like I say, I don't know how you can overlook him, but, that just to kind of maybe build on that a little bit, even though that next year is Honda's last season in Formula One, it really, really makes you wonder what's going to happen with that, because Ferrari doesn't seem all that keen on the engine freeze idea, but Red Bull isn't in a curious position. I mean, talk about a lot of storylines going into this winter, into this off season. That Red Bull engine situation for 2022 is a curious one. I know that Renault has kind of left a crack open in the door to maybe supply them again, or at least potentially have discussions about it. Although, I mean, as far as talking about breakups and marriages ending, that was not a particularly good one. It just got kind of it just kind of worsened over the years. Although, I mean, that's started as far back as 2014, that first year of V6 turbo hybrid. I mean, Horner was saying then, even though it wasn't as flat out critical and as nasty as it got in the later years, I mean, they were complaining back as 2014 that the Renault engines weren't as good as previously they were in the normally aspirated era. So, like you said, Mark, plenty to talk about, plenty to look at over the offseason, and I hope there's a lot of drama. I mean, considering we got 3.5 months to the next Grand Prix, from my point of view and your point of view and the show's point of view, that all of that would just be great show fodder for over the next 3 months or so.
I completely agree. I don't think I have anything additional to add in terms of value. I really look forward to the next couple of weeks and months. This is the time of year that's most exciting for me, just in terms of the silly season and the business side of the sport. And just how do these teams start to wrap their heads around the fact that we're still going to be very much in a pandemic for much of next year as they embark on a 23 race calendar. Yeah. Just crazy. And the reality is we'll probably start to see some really significant spectator turnouts in probably the back half of the season as we start to see the vaccinations begin to penetrate society in a meaningful way. But yeah, this is going to be a crazy off season. It's a shortened off season simply because the season had to run so late because you need to find a way to fit in 17 races. But it's going to be a crazy off season. At least 10 of the drivers will switch positions or be removed from the sport, or will be new to the sport entirely. You have at least two teams that are going through a rebranding exercise. Obviously, Racing Points will be kind of become the Aston Martin Works team. Renault as well, on a probably an equally important note, but probably less sexy, will be rebranded themselves. Renault will disappear from the grid next year. But yeah, I can't wait to see how the next few weeks and months start to play out.
I know. And it is another fascinating result or stat that was mentioned over this weekend, that since they got the F1 biosphere or COVID bubble, whatever you want to call it, in effect, they did something like 76,000 COVID tests, and they only had about 75 positive tests for drivers, team personnel, and any ancillary personnel that in the paddock, and you know, people like track workers and stuff like that. I mean, any time that when you have like a you know a disease as serious as COVID, any one of those tests is a big deal. But out of all the tests that they ran, that only represents 0.1%. positive tests. So, I mean, if they've proven anything that they're very confident about it once they got it set up. I mean, there were a lot of questions, obviously, I think, for everybody outside of Formula One, but they've proved that they can make it work. I mean, there were obviously hiccups along the way, but like you say, very much we're still going to be in this same position come the beginning of next season. And I was having this sort of this internal conversation with myself, earlier today, just kind of reflecting on the fact it was the last race of the year and all the things that we've gone through right from the shutdown and the cancellation of the Australian Grand Prix, the factory shutdown, which was just the microcosm to the global macrocosm and lockdown situations we saw everywhere, to the actual beginning of the season and the 17 races that we had. And I thought, well, yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, you know, Formula One is not important when, you know, you have like something that we've seen in terms of the pandemic and some of the horrible social and political injustices that we've seen. But I mean, the thing is, and I think it was mentioned, on the Sky broadcast as well, is it did bring a smile to people's faces. And, you know, I think that has value in a year that we've seen so many bad things, and so many bad things have happened to so many people, that it has been a nice temporary distraction. Of course, it's a luxury. I mean, we've been able to, and of course, for the people in Formula One, it's their livelihood as well. So it has a value in that. I've enjoyed it, and therefore, I'm sad that the racing part is over. But like yourself, I'm looking forward to the next couple of months of speculation and all the fun of the things that happen off the track. And it feels like it's a long time ahead of us, but before you know it, we'll be in the middle of February and we'll get to the winter testing. And then once you get to winter testing, I mean, you can literally sit there and count the minutes down as you look at the clock, because, you know, once you get to that test studio, the testing, that the first race of the season is literally around the corner, and 23 races next year. Sign me up. I'm ready to go right now. All right. Well, yeah, I think we pretty much talked ourselves out, Mark. So we're going to leave it at that. So, you know, 17 races, we've covered it from end to end. And another positive thing is, despite the fact that we've had all this drama and other things that have happened in our own lives, that we've managed to put this thing together. And I'm looking forward to going into this off season and the next off season, you know, doing the show with you and all the cool things that we've got planned coming up. So we're going to be busy during the off season on a number of things on the back end. But as always, if you want to get in touch with us, do so on Twitter at ScuderiaF1 or email ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com. We're also on YouTube, so hit that red sub button if podcasts aren't your thing, or search us up on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere else, anywhere that you are, we are. So look out for us wherever that may be. And that's it. That's a wrap. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll talk to you guys again soon. And that's it for us. Bye for now.